This is the ICANN board with technical experts group meeting in Constellation Room on Wednesday, October 15th, 2014. This session is scheduled to run from 15:15 to 16:30 local time.
We have to be around the table.
Hello, everyone. We'll start in a couple more minutes, just doing some last-minute logistical juggling. The birthday boy has entered the room. So, welcome everyone to the ICANN 51 Technical Expert Group meeting. Before we actually get engaged in the discussion associated with the technical experts' input, I would actually like to, I guess perhaps further embarrass the chairman of ICANN's board. Today is, of course, Dr. Crocker's birthday. To you, happy birthday to you, happy birthday dear Steve, happy birthday to you.
Thank you, everybody. I can report that the same thing just happened a short while ago in a meeting with the board of directors, and they were really terrible. they were just awful. And what I told them was, it's not within our skill set. We should hire outside consultants. And here we are. So thank you very much. I don't know what you bring in terms of technical advice, but we certainly have an improvement here. So you may get a call.
And just one last thing on that. I just put before Dr. Crocker 3 dozen cupcakes. Actually, that does seem a little, maybe it's 3 half dozen. So 18 cupcakes that he will be able to distribute as he sees fit, since ICANN is the distributor of unique cupcakes or something.
Just cookie, no.
So, and...
Guess what, Teresa?
So I would also like to announce that not only is it Dr. Crocker's birthday, it is also Teresa Swinehart's birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Teresa. Happy birthday to you.
And Teresa, befitting of your role as, quote, staff, could you help distribute these cupcakes that have been...
Just say no.
Yes.
If Martin. I may bring some technical clarity to this dual birthday issue, those people that know within a group of 21 people or more, there's a 50% chance of two people having the same birthday. Look it up on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
So we've proven that.
Actually, it's worse than you think. I would also like to announce it's also Sharla's birthday. But I think we can dispense with the singing.
And he's being serious.
That's really true. It's your birthday?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Amazing.
And actually, there are a dozen cupcakes in these boxes. So
I wanted a top level cupcake.
Okay, so to start out, there was a discussion on the mailing list, and some people had asked the very good question: exactly what is the technical experts group? I made up something on the fly, as I typically do, and it didn't cause any screams of outrage, at least that I'm aware of. So I decided to repeat it here. I actually need to disconnect for a second and send some email to she's got a stick, so... So the TEG is focused on forward-looking technical and technological issues, particularly as those issues impact the use of the Internet's system of unique identifiers that, in the view of TEG members, ICANN's board and staff should take into consideration when considering ICANN's strategies and operations. So that's sort of the general view that I had with regards to the technical expert group. The originator of this group did not scream in outrage at that definition, so I'm going to sort of stick with that for now. I do actually have to disconnect for just a second. My apologies. I have to transfer some files over to a stick. So either way, yeah. But feel free to talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah, this is Jonas Hoinen, and I'm the IETF liaison to the ICANN board. I would like to add a point to the agenda, which I had forgotten, though that it is my responsibility to do this. But there is a license statement that the IETF has sent to ICANN, and I would just like, in the end of the meeting, like to talk a little bit about that. And Steve, Don't look at surprised. It was on the board list.
Actually, yeah, that would be a really good idea. So, why don't we start with Jeff down at the end and just wrap it around that way.
Marcus Kum, incoming ICANN board member.
Patrick Feldstrom, ESSAC chair.
Jim Galvin, ESSAC vice chair.
Howard Benn, representing ETSI.
JDaily.nz.
Danielle from TEG.
Warren Kumari, one of the IAB TLG folk.
Sorry. Wendy Seltzer, W3C.
Ashwin Rangan, ICANN.
Steve Crocker, ICANN board.
David Conrad, ICANN CTO.
Paul Markopetris.
Ram Mohan, ESSAC's liaison to the ICANN board.
Lars-Johan Liman, co-chair of the Root Service System Advisory Committee.
Maglashev Yezhny and IAB.
Mark Hosters, Aaron, your token regional registry representative.
And Dave Piscatella, I'm Mark's friend.
Jonas Hoinen, the IETF liaison to the ICANN board.
Suzanne Wolf, RSAC liaison to the ICANN board.
Kim Davies, ICANN.
Margie Milam, ICANN.
Patrick Jones, ICANN.
Francisco Arias, ICANN.
Well, thank you very much. So, back onto the agenda. So this is the current agenda. I'm happy to add additional items if someone would like to add any. I know Yanni just suggested adding one. If no one has any agenda bashing, then we will progress. So the first, having the, soon, very soon. So I had sent out a set of topics sort of as a conversation starter, and these are sort of the questions that I had in my mind that I thought might be helpful at some point for the TEG to actually engage at some point. The first presentation will actually be done by Patrick, who has provided me with a set of slides that I will switch to momentarily. But in general, there were, you know, these questions were sort of issues that I believe ICANN will need to address at one point or another. And I'll just run through these. If anyone actually would like to comment on them now, we can. I figure we can spend about five to 10 minutes on this particular section before we move into the rest of the presentation. So, with no further ado, so what are the key areas of technical risk that ICANN faces? Does anyone want to shout out some suggestions of key areas of technical risk? Ooh. The after lunch doldrums, no? Okay. No risks. Even better. Yeah, we're done. Yeah.
David?
Yes.
I've got three slides on it later.
Okay. We will, and Patrick has some stuff on that later. This one is actually near and dear to my heart because I have been tasked with actually doing this. So if anyone has suggestions, I would deeply appreciate it. How can ICANN best improve its technical stature? Please, suggestions, anyone?
David, when you say technical stature, what are you looking to improve in your sense? How do you define technical stature, I guess I'd say?
So a understanding that ICANN has, for example, thought leadership is knowledgeable in its space, which in my view is the internet system of unique identifiers, is respected for that knowledge. Yes, Jay.
Right, I can talk all day. ICANN doesn't have a GitHub page. Let's get ICANN have a GitHub. Let's see everything that ICANN writes and stuff out on GitHub.
Actually, we do. Yes.
What, Eon or ICANN?
GitHub.com/ICANN.
Wow. What do you do there?
There's not a heck of a lot there, but there's about 6 projects on there.
Yes, Joe.
So I'll offer something up which I think is going in part reasonably well, but it would be a path to sort of increase this. You do have the fellows program that ESSAC has certainly taken advantage of. You know, you bring in someone who wants to come on for 6 months or a year or so and provide some specific expertise, which has facilitated some work products and could continue to do that. I think, you know, ICANN has a very good track record in growing various kinds of fellowship types of programs. And it occurs to me that you could use that as a path for beginning to understand what your options are and who you might be able to attract and what you could do with them. But you know, that's at least a partial success right now in what ESSAC has experienced in increasing that. Perhaps providing a way to support some of the other groups technically would be useful too. So.
Warren, then Dan.
I mean, one option would be for ICANN to actually participate more in some of the technical groups like IETF, etc. You know, have staff have the ability to come along and participate and speak as individuals, not necessarily with the concern that they're actually representing ICANN.
I was reminded that I should have people who are speaking declare themselves and their organizations if possible. And thank you for that suggestion. Any other suggestions? Yes, Dan.
Dan York, Internet Society. If I look at the ICANN webpage, I see nothing at all about technology. So that might be one detail would be to expose something on it about what you do in that space.
Yes, Warren.
Warren Kumari again. I think I sort of agree with Dan. I think some of us are sort of trying to figure out what exactly the question means. I mean, there have been some technical things which have not ended very well. Just increasing operational abilities and just more advertising what technical stuff ICANN is doing.
Yeah.
Well, Daniel, Migo. So one thing is probably to take part of other organizations, but the other part is to bring those organizations at the ICANN, for example. There have been a workshop, I think, yesterday on public safety, and that was really nice for people at the ICANN to see what is going on in other organizations, given the fact that people can attend all the different meetings and so on. So,
let's see. Dan York, I didn't see who was first between Jim and... Okay.
So, Jim Galvin, building on what Dan and Warren said in building out the website, you obviously have some technical expertise which is going on, and building on that and leveraging it. And the thing that I'm thinking about most is, of course, the security team. You know, so being able to say more about what they have and what they're doing, and on the website in particular, you know, making that resource available and much more accessible and known.
So, do you want to respond?
So, the ICANN security team pages somehow did not convert well in the makeover from the previous version to the new version. And if you do manage to find any of the content we used to have, it's in an archive. It actually took me over 2 weeks to find and curate all the stuff that we lost. It's fortunately not lost, it's just hidden. I've already put together replacement pages. It will look quite a bit like the ESSEC environment when we are done. And we have some other ideas, especially in the area of security awareness, where we'll be putting up some frequently addressed questions pages. We'll be putting up some resources that people can use for various levels of competency or non-technical competency. So there'll be a section for just regular internet users. There'll be a section for ICT users and a section for ICT administrators. So we are thinking, we know that this is a very big void. We've been trying to get to it. Obviously, trying to do this around an ICANN meeting is very challenging because of how many pages get posted and how busy our web admin is. But I would hope that in the next month you'll see a change.
Dan York, Internet Study. That was sort of my point, was you've got these groups like RSAC, SSAC, you've got these organizations there, but there's no visibility of that. And to Dave's point, I've learned through Rick Lamb primarily of some of the different monitoring and some of the different stats and some of the different things that you all have that are, again, hidden, buried somewhere. So I think as you expose that information, that would be useful to that. I'd also point out, with my role with the Internet Society, where I'm advocating around DNSSEC and pieces like that, I'm heavily promoting the DNSSEC workshops that happen at every ICANN. But if you look for those sites, if you look for the promotion of those, it's coming primarily from my site and the stuff that I'm doing over there. And so some better exposure of those excellent events. One of the people asked me, why am I going to ICANN sometimes? Because I know of my technology background, and I tell them, this is one of the best pools of DNSSEC people that you'll find anywhere around. Come to these events because you get people from the IETF space, but you also get people from other operators and other people who come here because of this. And so exposing that, giving it more visibility in some way, and the other groups that you already have. So I think part of the thing is that ICANN already has some good technical stature in there. It's just not being shown to the rest of the world.
And regarding the fact that you're doing the one trumpeting the DNSSEC workshops instead of ICANN, thank you.
And I think there's definitely, we need more of that. And so if we can amplify and have more people talking about it, that's all the better for what we do.
Martin.
I think there's one other vector that you could add to this, which may be slightly less work. If you look at all the constituencies, and then you talk about the work being done inside IETF and other groups, or even within inside Internet Society and ION and the like, you could, in fact, generate a mapping in some way of protocol specs, of technical work done, and which constituency has an involvement in that. And if that mapping was built in some, I want to say in some tool manner, but in some way that we could then get constituency members involved in either operational or standards that really affect them. You can think of who is and all the work being gone on, which has touched many groups, of course, but there are other areas as well. And I just think that mapping would help drive who has to be aware of what, as opposed to doing specific work and exposing specific work done inside ICANN.
And that was Martin Levy of Cloudflare. Jim, where did you... Okay. Warren.
So I think I'm just going to be echoing what a lot of people have said, is ICANN is actually doing a fair bit of technical stuff. Just when we think of ICANN, that's not what first comes to mind. I mean, there's the training that John Crane's group was doing with CCTLDs, or helping support that. Abuse coordination, a bunch of monitoring, the root key rollover stuff, which I believe you helped organize the discussions. But the messaging isn't really there. When people think of ICANN, they see the big front page, and they don't think the technical stuff.
Felice?
Yes. Jesus. Okay. Felice Yilmaz, ASOAC/Akamai Technologies. I actually want to make a very practical suggestion, but based on what I'm already hearing here. There used to be tech tracks somehow, tech days, during ICANN meetings. I think labeling it correctly and maybe creating a program committee among the SSEC, RSSEC, address support organization chairs and making sure that there is going to be some kind of program. This can be easily led. I'm sorry to put this on you guys, but ICANN staff can coordinate that very well, I believe. And if we can get, even half a day where people can come up with some presentations on technical matters, how ICANN community relates to certain technical issues, so that Patrick can talk about, I know he doesn't want to make yet another presentation, but normally people do not know they should be going to ESSEC to follow up certain things. I think we should create one track for those technical-minded people to come and sit in a room in a continuous way, and they will be seeing actual hot topics presented by the SO or ACs or even by the general public. If there happens to be a coordination for a program committee, I think there can be submissions towards that track easily. Thanks.
In the interest of time, I'll add you to the queue. I'll sort of cut the line on this particular topic and move on to the next. But, let's see, who do I have? Salmon.
Simon McKellar, nominate. I had echoing one of Warren's earlier points, which is there's a piece about starting with the end in mind and what the question actually is. Does ICANN want to be known for great DNS engineering? Does it want to be known as a great knowledge base? Does it want to be known as great researchers or even great innovators? Because actually, all of those disciplines require different sets of skills and actually quite often different people. I appreciate that doesn't help in answering that specific question that way, but I wonder whether focusing on those different groups might be helpful.
Jay. Okay, Patrick.
Yeah, I think it's really, I'm happy to hear what you're saying, Felice, because that's something that we're trying to do. But the fact that you were not aware of what we actually have managed to do is an indication that this communication thing is actually something we need to work on. What CCNSO have had their tech day for quite some time, and the reason why I want to talk about this is to because I'm not CCNSO, to explain how good I see CCNSO has managed and is managing to try and to turn the CCNSO tech day into tech day or tech days. And I'm now participating in the program committee from ESSEC to broaden the scope, and we also had OARC working together with that as well. So I think we see an embryo of what you want, but we can do so much better, and just the fact that you're asking for this at least give me more energy on working on this.
So,
I just want to say, in outside there, away from the ICANN, in the technical community, there is the perception of ICANN silos. I think what you're saying will help for that too. Because if you give one tech day without CCNSO or GNSO, then people will see there is siloless part of ICANN too. Thanks.
Jay.
Yeah. It's clear that we can improve technical participation in ICANN if we can ensure that technical meetings are contiguous over the early part of the week so that people can justify the cost of coming. And that's something that a number of us have been working on for some time. So on the tech day, we have just about managed to jettison it from the CCNSO to make it a top-level ICANN thing so that it will then become tech day in that type of way. And one of the things that we're still hoping to do is to get the program schedule to be tagged so that you just have a nice big colourful tag that says technical against the session or policy or legal or, you know, three tags against one. It really doesn't matter. So that at a glance, those of us who obviously cannot stand certain other kinds of tags can find the ones that we would like to go to. And we'll all immediately be able to see how contiguous or not those things are. So, you know, that's part of it, is trying to build that stream so that then more people attend.
Okay, and Patrick Jones, did you want to comment? Last
sure.
one.
So, Felice, I want to follow up with you after this because we had, I think, one of the best tech days at previous ICANN meetings on Monday, and it was all day, and it was a mix of, it wasn't just CCs, but we had presentations from a variety of groups, and I think we want to build on that, and there might even be an open spot on the tech day working group if you're interested.
Okay, thank you. At this point, I'm actually going to move into the contributed agenda items, and I'll go to Patrick Falstrom next. And how would you like? I can just do the slides here if you like.
Yeah, I think that's okay. Easier, so we don't have to move around. We save some time. No, in the meantime, yes, we call it Tech Day, but I think in reality it was Saturday closed O'Rourke, Sunday open, Monday open, Wednesday open. So it's this kind of naming thing as well, like just because we failed with communication, because we name it Tech Day in singular, also make people think it's only one day. But some people, technical people, were pretty busy this week. But once again, I think you're on the right track. And having you saying that we're doing the right thing... So anyway, some background. So what I did, I saw the questions that I got from David, and interesting.
Yes, there.
So I wrote down, like, from my perspective, how to try to address these kind of how do I attack this these questions, and I. Had a little bit of discussion in ESSAC, but I want to just remind people that this was my immediate reaction when I got the mail from David. So it was some kind of like sparking a discussion, of course including discussion between me and David. And then after having that discussion, we started a discussion whether we thought we actually would agree at the end if we continued the discussion. So anyway, so here are the slides. For the first thing regarding what are the technical risks for ICANN? The biggest problem I see is actually a mirror issue, that people are mixing so many things up. So to be able to sort out what are the actual sort of risks for ICANN, I think it's important to try to, when looking at the various things, to divide them in different categories. So here's an example of categories. Next, please. First of all, we have, of course, ICANN itself, the internal tools, communication in and out, root key management, and all the various systems that ICANN itself hosts. And note here that I'm mentioning these things doesn't imply that I think that what ICANN is doing is bad. It's just that when people are complaining and other kind of things, we need to sort of untangle the various. So this is one area where we need to make sure that ICANN continue to be stable and sound. It could be, for example, quite interesting for people to also understand what ICANN has done as examples, so other enterprises can copy what has been done. Having presentations on what ICANN actually is doing good, what is ICANN doing, sort of what can they improve. For example, we from ESSAC are working with Ashan on trying to see what kind of collaboration tools can we use. Next, please. The next thing has to do with IANA stewardship. Next, please. Here, I think it's pretty important regarding risk. I see a risk that too many people think that, for example, NTA is actually doing a lot of things here. We have written two reports from ESSAC, SAC 67 and SAC 68, that explain what the IANA function is from various perspectives. And in SAC 68, that is looking at the actual contract between NTA and ICANN, we come to the conclusion that the only place where NTA do have active involvement is in the authorization, in the chain of authorization for root zone changes. Of course, it's adult supervision. It's like you have the room with teenagers. The adult is in the room. And just by having the adult there, the teenagers will not start to sort of do bad things. But if we talk about real, actual involvement, it's very, very limited. So I see a risk that people are sort of over-exaggerating what NTA actually is doing. And because of that, it might be the case that people are requesting many, many more changes than what is actually needed. Next, please. Regarding DNS and DNSSEC, next please. I think I divide the DNS, first of all, the DNS issues in three or four different ones. I see the clear DNS issues, DNSSEC issues, DANE issues, and general acceptance issues for domain names. And out of these, I think that as the questions were asking, us to pick sort of one thing that I think is really important to talk about, I think that absolutely is root key rollover. So I, in the mail I sent, I thanked David for actually reinitiating the work for doing that, because it's something we really need to really need to look at and work on. And we need to work on it together. If we look at the community, like all of us in this room, what is it we can do together? I personally am very worried about what's happening on the security side. We saw the SSL v3 thing coming here. But on the other hand, as you know, that I've been following ESSEC and work that I've been doing personally during the years, I don't really like the how much we are relying on CAs and X509 certificates and that strict hierarchy. I think Dane, and because of that DNSSEC, but for good DNSSEC, we need good validation and lots of other kind of things, but that's the ultimate goal, and for me, that's the driving force to go down that path. But if I pick one, root key rollover. Next. And then the other thing, the elephant in the room, of course, that everyone is talking about has to do with routing and the issues we see with route announcements. And we have the IAB statement since a couple of years back that talks about RPKI, how important it is. Question there is, of course, like, are things happening, are things not happening, and what is, if any, ICANN's role? I have no idea, but maybe RPKI and for example, to make sure that we get validation of DNSSEC signed responses, which I think is one of the driving forces to get DNSSEC deployed. RPKI discussion and validation, arguments for validation, those are the kind of things that maybe, for example, we can talk about in this room, like across the various groups. And I think that was all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any comments or questions, thoughts with regards to the input that Patrick has provided? Dan.
You had a question earlier about DNSSEC and the validation signing pieces. Do you want to get into that now, or do you want to jump back out and go to those questions? How do you want to handle that?
We can pop back to the questions where I raised the DNSSEC stuff. If no one has any specific comments on Patrick's stuff, Evan? Oh. Okay. Izumi, did you want to comment? It's Mike. And please announce yourself and where you're from and what you do.
Izumi Okutani from JPNIC. Thank you, Patrick, for categorizing this. This is very helpful. And I have a question about any other possible thing to add on this. I'm just wondering, there's a lot of discussions about the WHOIS review, and I understand there's another consideration at the IETF at the very technical level, but I don't know if it's appropriate to consider what's being discussed and who is in the ICANN context and this platform, and something to be, look from a technical perspective how this would be affected. I'm interested to hear others' opinions about this.
My personal view is that given that the TG is focused on forward-looking things and the evolution of who is definitely, it's both past, present, and future looking, that it is a topic that is appropriate for this group. Let's see.
Wilfried Weber, Vienna University, and wearing a hat of a National Research and Education Network for a couple of minutes, I'd really like to suggest that maybe even the ESSEC has a closer look at RPKI. We were running a lab test for that new technology for the most recent 3 or 4 months in our little shop. And the little shop, the focus is on little. We are not a big tier one provider. We are just a network out in the street. And what we found is that, first of all, the availability and the quality of implementation on the various boxes is pretty limited at the moment. So this is something which is, giving me grief, because there is a lot of people who know how to deal with accidents on the routing plane these days. And there is not too many people being trained and having the same level of experience with properly managing RPKI or managing the RPKI'd subset of the network connected to the non-RPKI'd part of the network. And the last thing that I wanted to bring to the table here is that I am pretty worried that the current implementation allowing any announcement to carry just one digital signature is actually introducing a new single point of failure. And this is, in my sort of in my books, this is something which should not happen. If we want to deploy that in production environment, we should try to make sure that we do not introduce new single points of failures, just in the interest of getting a hold on some accidents that we knew how to handle. Sorry for taking too much time.
Francisco.
Thank you, David. Francisco Arias, ICANN staff. On the topic of who is, just wanted to point out that tomorrow, 10:30, there is a session on starting a discussion on deploying RDAP. This is closing the loop on what ESAC started 3 years ago with SAC 51, in which ESAC requested ICANN to work on replacing the WHOIS protocol. So there is still many questions there to be answered, and some guidance will be appreciated if you can participate in that session tomorrow.
Warren? Oh. Yeah, Warren.
So, Warren Kumari. So, going back to the RPKI topic, I was part of the original RPKI design group and active in the CIDR working group. If you're interested in that topic, there is a IETF meeting in Hawaii in a couple of weeks, and the CIDR email list is very active. I think the main discussion people have been having about stuff revolving around RPKI and ICANN is mainly the single trust anchor for RIRs, and I think we have some RIR folk in the room who might have some strong views on that. Do we have a Mark in the room?
Did you want to? Sorry, Kemp. Glare, please.
Bill Smith, I'm here representing myself today. I wanted to follow up on Patrick's point regarding the NTIA contract and its scope. While its scope might be seen as relatively broad, as SSAC pointed out, it's a very narrow and limited contract. I'll also add that it's no fee. And if a business person is looking at this, they're going to look at something and say, well, no money is changing hands. How much time do I want to spend figuring out the replacement for it? So I'm a little concerned of all the activity I've seen over the last year or so, dating back to NTIA's announcement about how are we ever going to, you know, replace the role that the U.S. government, and NTIA specifically, has played. I think there's an awful lot of emphasis on this, and there's actually not much there. This may not be the right forum to raise the issue, but I am concerned about it, that we will end up with something that will be very expensive to operate and very difficult to navigate. I see it as a big risk.
Thank you. Patrick.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, as the name ESSAC was mentioned together with RPKI, I can just say that, yes, RPKI is one of the topics that we are discussing. We are trying to keep track of what's happening in the community for the reasons that other people mentioned in the room, but it's not one of the work items that we have picked up yet.
And Dan?
Well, I see Mark reaching for his mic, and I would just, I guess I say from my perspective, it seems that most of the RPKI work right now on the operational side is being driven out of the RIR community. And so I think really, in my view, it seems like it's something that ICANN should really look at how they can support that effort that's happening through there in some ways. But it seems like it's an RIR-led effort at this point in time.
Yeah, thanks. So the regional registries have been working on this particular endeavor for a number of years now, and there's been a fairly low adoption rates, and it varies on the region. The most successful region is essentially is RIPE's region, and Kaveh, you're more than welcome to say something about that if you wish. But from the regional registries perspective, we're looking at this and trying to work all the kinks out, and all the kinks are not out on RPKI yet. On the in terms of the operational sort of footprint, how this thing should work, and there's going to be quite a bit of tuning going on as we learn more. As far as ICANN's role in this is, at some point we're going want to do some interop testing with ICANN on dealing with the GTA, the Global Trust Anchor. That has not happened yet, and it's not on the schedule.
Yeah, and just to reiterate that point, I believe a couple months ago, the chair of the NRO sent a letter to ICANN indicating that they had suspended any development on the Global Trust Anchor. ICANN was and is in a position to work on that when the RIRs are willing to move forward. Any other points here on this, actually in relation to Patrick's slides? No? Okay, then we will pop back to the questions just a second. So now getting more into the DNS-related questions. What technical innovations in the DNS should ICANN encourage and how? I believe Patrick has indicated Dane is pretty high up there on the list. Are there any other technical innovations that ICANN should focus on? Yes, Dan.
So this is really a combined answer a couple of those. What you ask about whether ICANN should encourage validation or signing, and I want to answer that as a path to getting to the first one, which is to say one of the topics we've talked about at DNSSEC workshops and the pieces that are here is that if we look at the two pieces of signing versus validation, you know, we're getting pretty good in some of the signing areas, but validation is certainly a critical need. But what's interesting is we're seeing a lot of good growth in that. Jeff Houston was mentioning at our talk today that his stats show we're now at about 13% of all DNS queries that are being validated. And the Kaveh from RIPE was showing on the Atlas measurements it's around 26-28% of the items that are out there. We're seeing some good growth in that. There's a lot more to be done to encourage that. But I guess the question that I would put out there for discussion at some point is that an area that ICANN can really exert any influence? A lot of the space where validation is occurring is in the network operator space and a lot of the enterprise networks and the places that are out there. And so I wonder if that's not perhaps something that really more of the network operator groups and the places out there, you know, can play a role in encouraging the validation side. But where I would love to see, personally, ICANN focusing is taking some of the friction out of the signing process and helping with the better automation of the spaces that are in there. And I'll give you two examples. One is right now there remains challenges with people, you know, if the average person who comes to a session here wants to do it, wants to go back and sign their domain. There remains challenges getting registrars, in particular, to accept DNSSEC-related records, DS records. You know, now, in many cases, the 2013 RAA is supposed to require that, but there are registrars, including one at which I have domains, that even after they've signed the 2013 RAA, they still don't accept DS records. And I could get into the reasons why, they tell me, but there's some work that ICANN could do to help do that. The other piece is that we have this issue with when you do a key role, how can the parent zone and the registrar be updated? Warren's given me a frowny face, like he wants to talk about this. But there are some new ways to make this work that ICANN could really help grease the process there and make that signing and automation side a whole lot more easy for some of this to work. And I think this is an area that ICANN can directly have an impact in because of the connections out there to the registrars and registries. Channeling Mr. Falstrom, two seats to my right, I would also say there's a great amount of
issues within the connections from a registrar to multiple registries in terms of uploading records to the registries. So there's a whole lot of automation that needs to happen on that side, on the signing side, that that ICANN is uniquely positioned to go and push at this and really make some of this happen. So if I had one wish coming out of the DNSSEC workshops that I wish ICANN could do, it would be to help make the help automate that process of signing inside the back end of all this.
Okay. I had thought that part of the RAA 2013 was a requirement to actually support that sort of stuff. And if a registrar has signed on to the RAA 2013, then and they didn't do that, then they were actually technically in breach. Is that right? Or
Francisco Arias from staff here. I would say if that's happening, my compliance colleagues would like to know about that.
And in fact, there's a web form that has one of the checkboxes doesn't do the right thing for DNSSEC, paraphrasing a bit.
Yes, and we have been promoting that and talking to it, but that still is a friction you'll see out there. So I think perhaps publicizing that if people aren't supporting that, they ought to, this is where they go, et cetera, would be good.
Warren.
So Warren Kumari, I'm generally disagreeable, and so I'll disagree with Dan. On the DNSSEC side, I think ICANN has already done a whole bunch to try and push the signing side. You know, it's in the RAA, there's been a lot of outreach, etc. Yes, a lot of lookups are now being validated. Unfortunately, that's because a lot of them are going through a number of large providers. There are a lot of much smaller providers who are not doing DNSSEC validation yet. I'm not entirely sure what ICANN can do other than just publicizing the issue, outreach, etc. But sort of pushing the validation side, I think, is useful. While I've got the talking stick, I think also some of the potential new work on confidentiality in the DNS. The IETF believes that pervasive monitoring is an attack on the network. And so we're going to be doing work. The working group should actually be formed before Hawaii, which is in 2 or 3 weeks, to encrypt the DNS or at least provide some sort of confidentiality between the stub and the recursive resolver so that people won't be able to see what users are actually doing, or at least passive monitors on the network won't be able to see what users are looking up. Something that ICANN might want to be watching.
I'm sorry. So things like passive DNS replication are going to be taken away from the criminal investigator's toolkit?
Possibly. Yes.
That's like a really, really bad idea.
Current thought, and this is a please, we would like ICANN and technical people, technical staff, etc. within ICANN to be involved in this discussion. The current thought is there, between the stub and the recursive, there will be some form of encryption. The recursive will still need to be able to see the actual query. The recursive will be trusted. This means that you'll be trusting your recursive resolver. You can choose which one you'd like to use. This means that passive DNS stuff, which watches from the recursive to the authoritative, that will continue to work. And recursive resolvers that would like to provide info to that will be free to be able to do so. But just as it is currently, there's no correlation between what the recursive is doing and the actual client who made the lookup. And I suspect that this is getting too technical for this audience. But I think that what it will do is that will take away information, and actually the working group will be called deprive. It will deprive attackers on the wire from what's going on, but not hide information from law enforcement, etc. And you're looking all freaked out, so we'll chat after this.
And just on this topic, after Dan and I will have sort of closed the... I'll add Dr. Makapetros. Next, Kaveh.
Kaveh Angela Ripe, NCC. So on the first question on DNS, what technical innovations should ICANN encourage? I think The two words, technical and innovation, I have a little bit of issue with that. If it's technological innovations, I would say none. There are other mechanisms for that. And innovation is also a little bit, it's not clear enough. I think we have a very good example, which I think we can follow also in the DNS arena. For ESSAC came up with challenges with WHOIS. So they came up with a few problems. They sent that to ICANN. ICANN actually with Francisco and Steve. They followed up with a few people who had already some implementations, some ideas, including us, Arin, some other registrars. And they brought that to IETF, so they actually planted the seed. They really worked, made that group. We had both at IETF, then the working group shaped, and then they followed up until now we are very close to having the final RFCs and all this stuff. And then from the ICANN side, again, now we have this as a requirement for new registrars. So I think this is a very good example. So it shouldn't be about innovations. I think it should be more about finding challenges through channels, RSAC, SSAC, and other ACs. And ICANN following them up through the right channels. But we shouldn't, because there is a big risk of going in parallel. Like when you say technical innovation, I expect, for example, in that field, IETF or sometimes W3C. I don't want to see ICANN getting into that line of business.
Okay. Evan, did you want to comment?
Evan Hunt, ISC. The comments I wanted to make were embedded in the ones that Dan York made, so plus one to him, but nothing else.
Okay, Jim?
So, thank you. Since Francisco either announced or threatened the compliance police, I wanted to point out that there's a subtlety here in the support that's required for DNSSEC. That is very much subject to interpretation, okay, and one has to be careful about this. Registries are required to sign the TLD zone, but they're not required to offer signed delegations, okay? And registrars in the 2013 agreement are required to offer DNSSEC services for registries that require it. Okay.
Seriously?
I mean, there's yes. If you look at the words, this really is the way it's down there. So, you know, there is a gap there. I've been calling this the policy gap. I call it a policy gap. People disagree with me on whether there's a real gap there or not.
Irrespective of what you call it, are there registries that are taking those words and interpreting it the way you're suggesting?
Do you know any new GLDs that offer signed delegations by default and agree to take them on? I mean, we do, but I don't know that other registries do.
Sorry, this is Ram. As far as I know, almost every registry is taking advantage of that interpretation of the words.
Oops.
Francisco.
So this is the first time I hear something like that. The registry agreement is very clear. It says registry operator shall accept publicly material from child domain names in a secure manner according to industry best practices. I'm not sure. And there is also the part about signing the zone. So what is there missing? I'm lost here.
Certainly, you know, it says that they have to have the feature, and the PDT will test that and see that it's there. But they don't have to allow registrars to do it. Anyway, you know, it's open to interpretation is the point.
Yes,
there's a bit there.
We'll engage in this.
Just paid for the meeting here.
Dan.
Real quick, Dave, one other aspect that ICANN is positioned to do is helping with metrics. One of the challenges we've had around getting good deployment metrics of DNSSEC is to understand what's happening at the second level. We know how many TLDs are signed, but once we start getting down below that, we can't really know. Now, with the new gTLDs, we have the CZDS, so we can gather stats out of that. But for the existing TLDs, one thing that ICANN could do would be to help facilitate those registries providing some kind of information around the number of signed domains in a common format or manner or something that could be exposed, you know, with some nice charts, et cetera, that we could be able to look at. So that's another place that ICANN could really play a role in helping us get DNSSEC out there.
Okay. And Paul, did you want to comment?
Yeah, I was just going to suggest that one of the things that doesn't seem to go out to the general public is evidence that users are protected by the existing deployments of DNSSEC. I mean, it all seems like you guys are running around in white lab coats and deploying all this stuff, but there's no particular, you know, evidence that, you know, user A didn't fall in the well because DNSSEC was there. And, you know, I think that being able to tell that story is going to get people interested in letting it pass through the end systems and so forth. And I think that, you know, getting it out to the end systems and proving that that actually helps the users is a place with great leverage.
May I respond? We just had a discussion at the DNSSEC workshop about email and some of the efforts that are happening with SMTP and the protection of MX records through DNS and DNSSEC. And there's actually some very interesting work coming out of CertCC that recently in September, where they were identifying some actual redirection of email that's happening out on the internet because of poisoned man-in-the-middle attacks against MX records. So you're absolutely right. These kind of stories need to be, you know, given a higher visibility.
Okay. Moving on, because we are, of course, running short on time. The next topic was related to, financial viability of DNS software vendors, and this will be introduced by Steve, and there will be a presentation, one slide, from Jeff Osborne. What do you need?
Those slides are for him?
Yeah.
Okay. So I've been drawn into discussions about funding for open source software for DNS in a couple of fronts, and it's led me to not only think about the specific cases, but the broader issue of whether all this is viable. The internet generates and runs on a huge amount of money. A lot of people are making money on it, big businesses. DNS is a critical part of the infrastructure, but somehow this isn't all connected. Why is it, to borrow a phrase, that we have to hold a bake sale for DNS? It's a peculiar situation. So one approach is, well, let's go around, pass the hat, and get some more money for the free open source software. But I'm inclined to step back a bit and say, you know, isn't all of this a little peculiar and broken? It's one thing when the network was young and a lot of research money was going into it and it generated free software that came out of that. We're much closer to being in a essentially steady state or certainly long past the beginning. So I wanted to stir that pot and see what people have to say.
Nima?
Lars Johan-Liemann. Yes, that thought has occurred to me too. And I've come to realize as I watch my growing children that you pinpointed it very well. The DNS part is part of the infrastructure. Now, how exciting is the internet infrastructure to my 14-year-old daughter?
Take it away and see how exciting it is.
It's exactly just as exciting as the power grid. So just what you said, the research money is now going elsewhere. And what we have is the existing system that doesn't develop as quickly anymore and therefore is not a blooming target, where it's not a blooming ad where people can see and direct money. But I still, you're also right in that there's an awful lot of money in operating the infrastructure, so there is a disconnect.
So that leads us to Jeff, if you could be quick.
I kind of appreciate it. I always get told to be quick because I'm terse by nature, and if somebody ever gave me half an hour, I'd be doing, you know, puppets with rabbits on the screen. It's interesting to note that the slide said, what's the financial viability of the DNS vendors, when the question is actually, what's the financial viability of the open source nonprofit DNS vendors? And the difference is important because the for-profit DNS vendors are doing fine because fully 100% of their users pay for the product. Whereas of the estimated 270,000 users of Bind, on the latest data we have, about 110 of them pay us. So compare and contrast, 100% of the users pay the commercial vendors, and 0.048% roughly pay us. So there's a challenge there, and there's a gap. I've been involved with the open source community for a long time. I've been president of ISC for a year. Before that, I've been involved in the commercial internet for a long time, but also in open source in other areas like the 3D printing world, in both hardware and software. And it's led me to really ask the question, what the hell are we thinking? Because if you describe the open source world out there, and sort of, let's get geeky for a minute here. On the x-axis, you have the amount of money that they have, and to the right, descending order, let's sort all of the people there. Up against the, this is a very asymptotic curve with a long, skinny, skinny tail. So up against the axis with a lot of money, there's the Linux Foundation, Mozilla, there's some other people you know of, and then there's this unbelievably long, underfunded group of companies. Earlier in the year when the OpenSSL vulnerability showed up, the Heartbleed, as on the shirt, brought to you by Indifference. It was amazing to see how little those guys were making. It was six people in a rough confederation working together, deployed, you know, in literally hundreds of thousands of places around the world, and their total donations in 2013 were $2,000 US. $2,000 US. So somewhere this model has broken. When you ask people in the internet industry, we tend to reflexively say open source is important. And then when you ask for checks, you tend to get people who cough and claim that the dog is eating their hat and all kinds of other things. So last week at NANOG, I was offered the chance to stand up for 10 minutes and talk. I got in front of 600 people and said, it's broken and the fixes are not obvious. So let's at least have a discussion before we close up our tents and go away. The obvious steps would be, I think Red Hat's the first successful version of this I knew of, where they sold subscriptions, and that's kind of an easy process. We're selling subscriptions. It's challenging, but after doing some adjustments to staff earlier this year and focusing on only a few things we're good at, ISC is actually a well-funded startup. We're on the left end of that asymptotic curve. We've got a few million bucks in the bank. We're break-even. Terrific, that's nice, but there's a lot of open source out there. There are a lot of other vendors just in the DNS space, and what we do with them is a really good question. So if the subscription model doesn't work for everybody, the freemium model is often, and I would argue that if you give free software to everyone and the good stuff to the people who pay you, you have committed the software equivalent of a sin. It's morally reprehensible, in my opinion, to give crap to the general public and the good stuff only to people who can afford it. And that's just a moral decision, and we're not going there. Bake sales, gun running, extortion. We haven't tried these yet. The bake sale's coming along well. The gun running and extortion is tied up in legal. I should hear from them later. And so maybe we'll have that in time for IETF. So, again, this is really just a request for comment and for people to think. I'm Jeff at ISC.org. Steve, I know, is worried about and thought about this. We had lunch this summer. We've talked about it. The issue of how to fund open source is not a resolved one, and it's one that I think is important, because if we end up with only for-profit commercial entities involved with implementing the standards, the RFCs, and everything else the internet runs on, it's going to be a very different internet than the one that got us where we are now, that I'd argue, you know, has really been a net good for the world.
Thank you. And I had Warren and Jay. And a time check, we have about 9 minutes and a couple more presentations to do, so quick comments.
I'll talk fast. So I believe a number of registries and registrars, sort of recursive resolvers, are the ones who are actually contributing to the big name server vendors, mainly because without the DNS, they would have no reason to exist. It sort of seems to me that without the DNS and without IP addresses and stuff, ICANN wouldn't have a reason to exist either. I don't know if ICANN is contributing to the big open source name server vendors, but perhaps they should.
Okay, as the person doing the next presentation, I'll be as quick as possible then. So the internet breaks business models. We all know that.
And the one thing I cannot stand is the people whose business models are being broken not understanding that it is them that is in the wrong, it is not the internet or the model. Okay, open source is not being broken in any way, shape or form. Open source to me is getting stronger than ever. Okay, the thing that needs to be dropped more than anything is religion about how to sell a product. Products need to be sold in very different ways. We know that Hollywood is suffering because Hollywood will not just give us the content we want in the format we want it, downloadable the moment we can get it. Okay, so I live in a country in the arse end of the world, and I read about new films being released in the US and they don't appear 2 weeks later. And what are my children doing? Pirating it, okay? And that's the fault of the Hollywood movie people. And yet they are constantly asking us for protection and to be protected and, laws be passed. We should not give in to that at all, okay? People need to reinvent and introduce a new business model because that is the only way to go forward. Now, Jeff and I have discussed this. I have given some very clear views over email about how to fix this, okay? In this specific case, I'll share some of it. A subscription model means that I, as a small CCTLD, for example, pay $10,000 to get basically security release information 3 days or 5 days after it originally, comes out. Okay, it is targeting the wrong people again. We, these people around here, are not the people. Everyone always goes to the CCTLDs or the registries. Can we please have some money? There are, as 270,000 whatever accustomed people using some of these software, they can all pay a little bit. You need a different way of thinking that is adjusted to the new reality that we have. When 20 years ago there were largely just the registries and a handful of ISPs being the main customers of some of these companies, and they were the people to do it. But it's moved on so much, and that's what needs to happen, and that's what will fix it. If an individual company goes under, then the whole thing is not broken. And in this particular case, we've seen not DNS, and we've seen Yadifa produced by as open source, and doing well and doing strong. And so I'm sorry, but if ISC can't do it, then that's not our problem.
Wendy Seltzer, and I suppose I'm thinking more about the services than about the software when I think of some of these as sort of public goods problems to which one answer that we might not like very much is the sort of surveillance-driven advertising model. And so if we can find other options for funding from the sources of revenue off those public goods, that a valuable alternative.
So I see a couple of additional comments, but I would point out we have 5 minutes left, two presentations, so I'm thinking we're not going to be able to get to those presentations. Do we want to continue on this topic or talk to Jay and Howard very, very, very quickly? Yeah, I don't know what's after this in this room. If people want to stay longer, I'm free this entire evening. So Evan, go ahead.
Evan Hunt, ISC. I wanted to address the comment made by the gentleman over there. I'm sorry, I don't know your name. I have ISC employs me. I have a sentimental attachment to them. I get a paycheck from them. It's a very nice little company, and I would like it to survive, but I don't think that's the problem that Jeff was addressing here, and it's not the problem that I think is important to solve. When we say that funding of open source is important and broken, we're talking about things like Heartbleed and Shellshock. If ISC goes under, okay, that's too bad, but somebody needs to be looking for these problems and addressing them, and if we're not paying the people that need to do that enough money, then that's a systematic problem. I'm not here worrying about ISC. ISC is actually doing pretty okay.
And Warren.
So yeah, I agree with you fully, Evan. I think that the whole open source view where anybody can download it and use it is great. But I think there should also be an expectation that if you're a large organization and you're downloading it and relying on it for your services, you're expected to contribute some money back to the project or to the open source world at large. I think that currently Some people do that, some don't, but it's not really expected, and possibly putting stuff in license agreements, saying, you know, this is open source, go off, derive stuff from it, etc. But if you make large chunks of money from it, please give us some too.
Okay, thank you. Jay, we have 3 minutes.
Great. So I may be alone in this, but I see an observed trend in the way that things are happening and the expectations that people have of ICANN. And this is about the dependencies in the way that we operate and ICANN or centralized infrastructure being part of that dependency. So I see three things happening, that we are moving from asynchronous dependency to synchronous dependencies. For example, there are certain things that protocol parameters list and things that we can just download from IANA anytime we like. That's what I mean by asynchronous. Moving to something where we actually have synchronous, we have to do a lookup to go and get that data there and then. The other one is from decentralized to centralized dependencies, which I'll talk about, and from in-source to mixed-source dependencies, so that we're no longer dealing specifically with one organization, we're dealing with contracts that may have been issued. Next slide, please. So here are three examples. The centralized zone data service, to my mind, does two things. One is centralized authorization, and the other is centralized data access. I understand the first, I don't understand the second. The next thing is expert working group on WHOIS, which is also about centralized authorization and centralized data access. I don't understand the second, and I only partially understand the first. And the third one is bootstrapping in WIRDS, which is real-time use of a centralized infrastructure, okay, in order to do that. So can we move on to the last slide, please? So I have three questions. Do we know this is happening? Do we want it to happen? And what are the guiding principles?
Questions, comments, thoughts? Yes, Steve.
In some number of seconds, I'm going to bolt out of this room to go to another meeting, which is precisely to the joint board GNSO working group on how to identify the questions that need to be dealt with to take care of the expert working group report and figure out things. These are exactly the kinds of questions and a few more that I expect we will raise to the surface, because I think that however, the expert working group did excellent and great work, but I think that these questions actually do need very, very strong attention and some examination.
Bill.
Bill Smith, thanks for raising the issue on centralized authorization, authentication, et cetera, for WHOIS. I think that's I'll just leave it as that's a pretty poor idea.
So yes, Jim.
Okay, so I want to respond a little bit, I think, on that particular point. I mean, I think we need to separate that into two parts, okay? Because as a party that would have to... A lot of these things are interrelated is kind of the problem. So, I mean, I like your questions, Jay. I should first say I think the great questions are just absolutely outstanding observations, and they deserve a lot of attention. But on this thing about centralized authorization being a bad idea, as one who would be a party, if you will, so now not necessarily wearing an ESAC hat here, to the notion of a centralized database through which you are to provide differentiated access, so looking at the WHOIS stuff in particular, you know, the problem is, how am I supposed to authenticate all the people that would come there? You know, I mean, we need to separate the problem of identifying where the credentials come from and who creates them versus who uses them. And that was a question that was never, you know, separated in that whole discussion as far as I can tell. And so we move towards a centralized model, and, you know, we all have our issues with a centralized model, but, you know, it's a deeper question.
So I am afraid we have run out of time, and I have been informed that this room is actually being used at 4:30 for the next group. So I thank everyone, and I apologize deeply to Howard for being unable to get to his presentation. I will send it out to the list, and I hope people will be able to continue the discussion on the list. Thank you very much.